We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, Hour 2 of the show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal. Jace Croft is at the controls. We're happy to have back here on the program, once again, Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics as a column that appears regularly in the News Gazette. He's also written for other publications in this field and for a long time now has been doing his best to keep up with everything that was new in this area that changes so much. And he's been here on the program before a number of times so that we could talk about what's new in the way of things like televisions with recording both audio and video. Consumer electronics, basically the idea. And so if you have questions, and certainly it can be, even for somebody who spends all of his time following what's new, it can be confusing. And certainly for the consumer, it can be confusing. Maybe you're thinking about buying a new television set or a new piece of audio gear or whatever, and you're confused about all the various options. I know Rich can kind of help you think about it, or at least can talk about what's important, what to look at, and questions about things as they change and what's new. I'm sure he'll see if he can help you out. 333-9455. That's the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And email will-talk@illinois.edu. Hey, thanks very much for being here once again.
It's my pleasure.
In television, I guess now the thing people talking about, I don't know how close we are to this actually becoming a reality in people's homes, but I'm sure people have read 3D TV. Have you had the opportunity to see 3D TV?
Not yet, because I didn't actually make it to Las Vegas. It's a little expensive to go out there these days for the show. Yeah. But I've read everything there is to read about it. And I still wonder, like, do we really need it? It seems the industry is so focused on the next big thing.
Yeah.
And now they got the government to force us to go to digital television, to high-definition television. What are we going to sell next? We already are selling TVs that are 60 inches with great resolution. What can we sell them next? We already have 7-channel surround sound. What's next? Well, we'll make it 3D. And, of course, the movie Avatar is breaking every box office record. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's on a big movie screen. And that's using the conventional colored glasses, whereas with your 3D TV, you'll use these very expensive special shutter glasses that are synced to the TV by an infrared link between your head and the TV. So the glasses will have a battery in them, mm-hmm. which you'll have this thing on your face. And I don't know how it's going to work with people who wear glasses already. All those things that are going to, you know, this is not just your little paper cellophane kind of 3D glasses. And frankly, unlike with HD, when HD came along, high definition, there's already a huge backlog of material because it was all the TV shows were shot in 35 millimeter film, which is automatically HD. So there was plenty of high definition material already in the vault. In fact, all the big movies, everything was ready for high definition television. With 3D, there's a limited number of 3D movies available. There's some 3D programs that were shot just in case this was going to happen. And now somebody said they're going to start a 3D sports network. Mm-hmm. So the football is going to go flying into your room and bop you on the nose while you're watching, when it goes out of bounds. But there really isn't a lot of material yet to fill up the channels like there is for HD, which was already around before the TVs converted to HD.
So of existing television sets, are there some televisions now that people would have that would be capable of doing 3D? Or if we were really going to go big into 3D, does that mean that now, again, people would have to go out, most people would have to go out and buy, if they wanted it, would have to go out and buy another television?
Yes, there are no existing 3D capable sets. They will be on the market at the end of this year. That's what the big thing at CES was, they are going to have sets on the market. Panasonic even showed one with like a 150-inch screen in 3D, plasma set. It would probably take up the entire budget of WILL just to buy the set. So they exist, but the only good thing is that your existing television will not be obsolete. The government's not going to permit us to have to go through that torture twice in a decade of throwing away our TVs and getting something new. So it's supposed to be compatible, and we'll see exactly what happens. All I know is that when I watch HD TV, I am just so amazed at how wonderful it is that it was worth the conversion last year. Remember, it's just about a year now since we converted. And I watch those programs, some of the shows on WILL-TV, for example, the nature shows and the other shows that are in HD, and then some of the commercial TV drama series. And I'm just always astounded how wonderful it looks, how just the colors are so accurate and the picture is so lifelike and vivid. And when you think back to what we had just 2 years ago, boy, I'm sold. But as far as 3D, I think the jury's out. I'm not sure. I don't really have a desire for 3D television in my own home. I guess I'm going to spend the extra money and go see Avatar at the theaters where I can spend the $250 extra on top of the already outrageous ticket so I can experience it in 3D. But I'm not really sure what it really buys you in the ultimate. You know, how many times are you going to sit down and want to see all the shows in 3D? I guess we're going to start having televised Focus 580. We'll do it in 3D, David.
It's frightening enough in HD. 3D, me, they don't need that.
So they can see that I need a beard trim, you know.
And, That's right.
So, that, you know, it's an amazing thing that the electronics industry has to live from thing to thing. The other thing is, of course, personal, portable, digital music players, as in iPod, as in Zune. And now they've taken those as far as they can take them at this point. What are they going to do with it next? They've made them as small as possible. They've made the screens as good as possible. They've crammed as much, all these app stores have crammed as much functionality in as possible. Of course, now they want everybody to simply have a single device, a mobile phone that contains all of this music player, camera, et cetera. And they've pretty much run this as far as they're going to run it, because people who are serious about photography are still never going to use a phone to take their pictures.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is that serious music players, portable music players, are disappearing because you can put all this wonderful digital circuitry in, but they don't pay a lot of attention to the little chip that does the amplification that actually gives you the sound quality. So if you record a high bit rate, put a high bit rate music on the player, the little amplifier may not be up to the task of giving you truly low distortion sound in your headphones. And that's always been a problem with these players, is that they still have much more distortion than we were used to from our old stereo systems, which, you know, there was a race to the 0001 distortion, et cetera. So yeah, I think those are the two places we're really going. The one product at CES that really scared me, I was checking all the blogs and all the websites, was somebody has made an attachment for your cell phone camera that can see through clothing.
Does it work?
Only in sunlight, apparently. But when you start thinking that people are doing this kind of thing with electronics, it's kind of scary. I mean, it's bad enough that the Transportation Security Administration wants to look at us disrobed as we go into an airplane, but to have people putting this little adapter on their cell phones and taking pictures that can see through clothes is a pretty scary thing. And before we take the calls, I just want to say that the one thing that really concerns me now is, in all the years I've been writing, which is getting pretty close to 35 years now, there was always a goal that technology was not perfect. That is, there are things you couldn't do. Well, we've reached a point with technology that there's almost nothing you can't do. Mm-hmm. If somebody has the money and if there's a market for it, it will be done. And so anything is possible with technology now because of digital technology. It just, you can create products. If somebody can think of a product and there's money to build it and people to buy it, it will exist. It's somebody to build it and they will come. Well, that's pretty much the case with electronics these days. And I'm just amazed when I look at what's introduced to CES, things that we never dreamed of, we have now. And not that, but they're cheap. I mean, big screen TVs, you can get a big screen TV for $900. That's fabulous. So, you can afford these things. And there was some thing in the paper the other day about, even during the recession, the one thing people didn't want to give up was a big screen TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they give up all these other things in life, but not a big screen TV. And that really says a lot. So that's my sermon for the day.
All right. If you'd like to speak with Rich, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Rich Warren is our guest. He's an electronics writer for the News Gazette. Also has a little show we run here called The Midnight Special. That's on, when did we run that show?
It's on 2 o'clock Saturday afternoons.
All right. If you like music. Anyway, let's get back to get to the phones here. We'll start with Champagne in line one right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
First, let me say I agree with you on the 3D TV. Who needs it? But I do have a question about what's the easiest way to get Netflix on a TV. If you could answer that for me, that'd be a big help. Thank you. And I'll listen to the radio.
Okay.
Netflix on TV, I assume you mean you want to get it directly off the internet rather than actually renting the DVDs from them in the mail. I forget the name of the box, but there is a box out there. I'm not sure if it's the Roku box or somebody's box is affiliated with Netflix, and you buy this box for $100, and it connects to your internet if you have broadband, and you can get movies on TV. The other way to do it is the way I've just done it, is I bought the least expensive PC I could find, and made it ideal for TV, for video recording, and it connects to the internet, and I can go on the menu and select things and pay for them online. I believe it'll work with Netflix. I'm about to try that out because I'm going to be writing a column about that in a couple of weeks. So you can either get a dedicated box that works with Netflix, which I think costs about $100 or so, and then subscribe to the Netflix subscription that way, or you can get a specialized PC, which will cost you between $600 and $700, that you can also use to record anything you want off the air, off the internet, or whatever, because you can get a tuner with that. And I've been recording HD programming on the hard drive, and it's fabulous. I don't have to pay TiVo for a subscription, which is wonderful. So that's another way of going about it. But those are the two ways, and I wish I had a list of which. There are five or six different boxes out there, black boxes, and they work with different subscription services, different things you can download, different movie services. And I know that Netflix works with one or two of those boxes, and so I'd have to look that up and put it in my column.
Well, is that going to be in your upcoming column? Are you going to have some of that information?
It's going to be in about 2 weeks. I've already written the one for a week from now, but it's the choices. Finally, Microsoft got it right. The new Windows 7 has a media center that truly works, and it gives you a menu of all broadcast television, which you can then record just by clicking on the name of the show. But it also gives you everything available on the internet, and you can whatever's free you can click on and get, or you can subscribe, pay, and get download movies and TV shows from the internet. Mm-hmm. So you have an incredible choice of things that you can subscribe to or get for free just by using their menuing system, which is free, unlike TiVo, which you pay $13 a month for.
It must be that there's something like that for the Mac, if you're a Mac person also.
There must be, yeah. I'm pretty sure there's something very similar for the Mac. Mac has its own way of doing it. In fact, a lot of people are using that little, iMac, little box.
The Mini Mac?
Mini Mac, yeah. That seems to be an ideal entertainment server, and people are using that. So,
and if you're thinking that you're going to be wanting to do that, will all televisions, at least if you buy a new HDTV, is it going to have the appropriate inputs so that you can plug this thing into it?
Oh, what you really need, no matter what you get, is something with an HDMI output. Like all the computers now are coming with HDMI outputs from the video card. Uh-huh. That's what you need, because that's what you go. All the new TVs have HDMI inputs. And that takes the audio and the video into the TV. So it's a one-cable solution, and it also has all this copy protection affiliated. So if they don't want you to watch something, it won't go through the HDMI cable. You can, in fact, connect most TVs have other inputs, old-fashioned inputs, and sometimes you can take those out of the computer. But that also may be blocked by these new video cards are off all the copy protection stuff in them, unfortunately. For those of us who have honest viewers who just simply want to watch something and not duplicate it or whatever. But, yeah, the HDMI is what you really need. It's, high-definition multimedia interface, I believe is what it stands for. So.
Okay. Well, let's talk with someone in Chicago. They're next. Line 4. Hello.
Oh, good morning. Hey, Rich, it's been a long time since we spoke. I just wondered, now that Comcast has bought NBC, are we going to see more cable programs on a regular network, or how's it going to work out?
Yeah, there's going to be – let me break this to you gently, but the future holds that we're not going to have very much free TV at all.
Yeah, I figured that already.
The ultimate goal is you're going to pay for everything. And I don't know if that's going to apply to public broadcasting, but certainly in the commercial world, everything is going to end up being pay-per-view at some point. And I fear sometime in the next 10 years, perhaps even, although the government may not really feel good about that. And when you have cable companies buying into broadcast networks, the program is going to be fluid back and forth. There'll be cable programs showing up on NBC, NBC programs showing up on cable. But what they want to be able to control is the fact that you won't be able to record NBC programs, for example.
Is that why we haven't seen the HD DVD recorder?
That's right.
It's technically possible to make one, right?
Oh, a Blu-ray recorder, that you can get one for your computer, but you can't get a standalone box at this point. They don't want you recording DVDs at home of programming you get on the television. This is, you know, all thought out. And they don't even want you to do it on your computer, but since since Blu-ray recorders have other purposes for a computer as far as data storage, they can't really completely block that. So people can use it to back up their computers or to create their own multimedia programming and stuff that's perfectly legitimate. But, yeah, there's going to be more and more control. Like right now at this moment, Hulu, which is this aggregation service that gives a lot of the network's programming for free on the Internet, will be starting to charge soon. So it won't be a free service anymore. CBS has its own site, and they're thinking about whether they're going to charge. If Hulu charges, then probably CBS will charge, since they're not going to Hulu.
Hulu is going to go to Hulu.
Yeah, something like that. So we're in a brave new world, and I in some ways I regret it. I love the quality of digital transmission. I think it just offers us incredible lifelike images. At the same time, it's totally controllable, unlike analog. Lord knows they tried to control analog for years and only managed to...
Well, when television first came out in 1946, the movie people hit the dust and they just went berserk. They thought it was going to put them out of business. They've always acted in panic like that. When the VCR came out, Jack Valenti said it was the cancer in the belly of the movie industry, but it turned out to be a tonic. Well, and they're doing the same thing now with the...
Yeah. And something that most people don't realize also is that, you know, our conventional or old-fashioned television was a 4x3 aspect radio, virtually square picture. And then the new HD system is a 16x9, a widescreen picture. And people are scratching their heads. The fact is that most movies until 1950 were in a 4x3 aspect ratio. That was the standard for the movie industry. The 35mm film was a 4x3 aspect ratio, and that's why they chose that for television. The movie industry says, well, TV is going to kill us. We have to offer the public something they can't get on television, so we're going to offer them a widescreen movie. And so for all these years now, they've been making widescreen movies that you couldn't truly see in their proper perspective on television without letterboxing, without black bars in the top or bottom or crunching the picture or whatever. And so now, you know, TV is finally the same as movies again, except, of course, now that they want 3D, which is the next step forward.
I'll just one more question, then I'll let you go. A long time ago, DirecTV, and I have this on the recording, they came out with a commercial that said, you know, we're going to launch a series of satellites that will allow you to pick up over 1,500 channels. What happened? I mean, why didn't they do it?
Well, they do offer about 150 channels, if I'm not mistaken. They're with the Internet. Probably they didn't do it because the Internet is providing all the rest of those channels. There's no economic incentive to offer that number of channels on a satellite when you can get it via Internet.
Well, not only that, but who would you put on all those channels?
Well, yeah, exactly, and who would watch them?
Yeah, it's a lot of simulcasting. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, well, thank you. Let's go to back here to Champagne, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to throw in my two cents on that. Netflix, you can also get that through your Xbox. 360.
Exactly. I'm sorry I forgot about that. You're right, and that's a very good way to do it because then you can have a box that serves multiple purposes, and so it actually makes it cost effective.
Okay. And my other question is, can you not record things off of your DVR onto something? Because I've got my DVR, my hard drive there is just full of stuff, and some of these shows I just don't want to delete, but. You know, I hate taking up the space on the hard drive.
It depends on the DVR and what kind of outputs it has and what kind of copy protection. I forget now. I believe TiVo blocks most recording off the box.
Uh-huh.
But if it has a conventional, if it has an S-Video output, you can probably make analog recordings from it on a conventional DVD. But I don't think you can make any kind of digital copy of it.
Okay, and then my last question, cell phones and applications. Do you get charged for the applications? But somebody told me even if you have an application on your phone, you get charged per, you know, per, I don't know if you know about the billing of every cell phone company, but do you get charged to have that application on your phone after you paid for the application?
Not that I know of. The only time you'd be charged for an application, if it's using the network, that is, anytime it goes and contacts a cell tower, you're charged for that. If it depends on your service plan, of course.
Sure.
But just to have it on your phone and not have it actually contacting a cell tower, not using airtime, once you paid for it, I believe it's yours.
Yeah. See, well, of course, the phone might be automatically updating itself with that app all the time. You may not be aware of that, too. every time, you know.
I doubt, that could be, but it all depends on your cell phone package as well. I mean, if you have a lot of airtime for your data package, it really shouldn't matter.
Right. Okay, well, thank you.
All sure. Right. Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Rich Warren. He writes a regular column about consumer electronics, mostly concentrating on audio and video that appears in the News Gazette newspaper. He's written for other publications, too. And every once in a while he's here, we talk about what's new in the way of television and video and audio. And if you have questions, you can call us 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, we are certainly well on the way to the point where I think actually we've been talking about this, and so it shouldn't exactly be new to people. The idea that we're coming to the point where more and more people will be getting more and more of their media either by streaming it or downloading it. It's going to come that way. Is it the goal? And now, you know, if you want to watch a program that's scheduled on a particular time, there are a variety of ways you can record it and watch it some other time. Is it your expectation that what the content providers would like is to go more and more to everything being on demand, so that what you do is, rather than record something and watching it later, it's all there for you. And whenever you decide you want to watch the show, then you sit down and you say, all right, play for me Law and Order, or, you know, what, or Saturday Night Live, for that matter, or, you know, whatever show it is that you want to watch. You click on something, you say, all right, play this for me, and then it's right there.
I think that might not entirely work for them, because they still want to seduce you into watching a program that you're not familiar with. The thing with network TV is, okay, it's free, so you turn it on and you see Law and Order. Oh, I like that. See, I like those guys, and that I want to watch that. Mm. Then they get you saying, okay, if you want to watch it again, if you want to watch the next episode, then you can get the on-demand kind of thing. There's still going to be some degree of force-feeding you material. But what most people don't realize, the other thing about everything being paid for in the future or on-demand, is the cell phone companies and a lot of others look at the television spectrum. Fortunately, radio is so insignificant it doesn't even show up as a blip. But the television spectrum is vast, and they want those frequencies. Why are we wasting all these frequencies on free television? If we could convert them to wireless internet like WiMAX or cell phones or whatever, we could make money off this much more than these TV broadcasters who are wasting all this bandwidth giving away free programming. And there are people who are trying to get into Congress bills that would start taking away free spectrum. They want to now say, you know, when they went to HGTV, they lopped off 20 channels at the top of the UHF spectrum. Now they want to lop off another 20 channels because there aren't enough cell phone frequencies. There aren't enough WiMAX frequencies. WiMAX is sort of a combination of Wi-Fi and cell phone technology, sort of like a Wi-Fi on steroids. So, you know, they keep wanting to take away more and more spectrum, and which is what all these frequencies are that we use for broadcasting. And I said, fortunately, radio is so tiny. It's not even about half a TV channel, FM radio. And AM radio is even tinier. So that's probably going to be insignificant as far as they're concerned. But they want those TV channels to use for making money.
Mm. Just to go to something completely different, the question prompted by something that you said earlier about the sound quality on MP3 players. Now, I don't know how many different players you've had the opportunity to listen to. Do you think that there is a big difference in the quality of the music that you get from one player to another?
Well, not with the headphones they provide. You can't tell much difference because they give you pretty poor headphones, and that's the mm-hmm. cheapest part of the unit. But if you go out and buy a very fine pair of headphones and then start connecting them to different units, you'll hear a subtle difference. Also, it depends, though, on what the bit rate is. The standard bit rate for iTunes, the old one that's the standard policy for them, is pretty basic. It's 128. And that is not true high-fidelity CD quality. Now, you can, the new iTunes bit rate, you can ask for the higher quality bit rate. I think you pay slightly more. That is much closer, to CD quality. I personally use 320 kilobits per second, which is basically CD quality. But, of course, then you get less on your iPod.
Right.
It uses up more memory.
Yeah.
So at that point, then the output of the audio amplifier starts to make a difference, because then when you have a high-quality signal, you can start hearing the difference. But to 95% of the people out there with these units, it makes no difference because they're bopping around in noisy environments with cheap headphones. And until you start using good headphones, that's what happens.
Yeah. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Rich Warren, and he's here occasionally on the show. We talk about what is new in the way of consumer electronics. So if you're interested in sound, you're interested in recording, you're interested in television, any and all that kind of stuff, give us a call, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, that prompts a question then about headphones or earbuds, and those, and I'm not sure how many brands make this claim, but there are a number that use language like noise canceling that supposedly will help if you're listening in a noisy environment. You know, I have one of these things, and I listen on my way to work, and I think one of the things that made me appreciate was just how much noise there is out in the world. Sometimes I can be walking along, and if I'm listening at a comfortable level, the traffic noise will completely drown out the music. So do noise-canceling headphones actually work?
Oh, absolutely. There are two different kinds. There are passive ones where they simply block the noise from entering the ear canal. And some of those are those like idiomatic earbuds or some of the Shure earbuds that actually block the noise and deliver extremely good sound, by the way. Those are superb quality phones, and they cost $150, $200,
$350. Yeah,
expensive. Or there's the kind of phones that use both passive and active noise cancellation. Sony, Bose, Sennheiser are the best probably of the batch, where they put a muff around the ear, a regular ear headset, which blocks noise from entering, and then they take the noise. They have little microphones on the ear cups. They take the noise and invert it out of phase with itself and feed it back into the earphone. So the noise actually cancels, like sort of like matter and antimatter. It just cancels itself out. And so you get a significant amount of noise reduction that way. And if they combine the passive with the active in the right proportion, they can pretty much block out a lot of the environmental noise. I know on airplanes, which I will not fly without noise-canceling headphones, this new Bose QC15 is truly amazing. I mean, the flight attendant keeps having to tap me on the shoulder if I want my free glass of water, because they really are effective. I suppose I can hear the announcements. I can hear somebody's making an announcement. I can't always hear what they're saying. So in an emergency, I would, of course, know that something was being said and I have to take them off. But they're pretty amazing. And I think in the temporary word, if you're on a bus or, I would question using them when you're walking, because you might not hear something that could be important to hear, although I can understand why you would want to use them when walking, because it's such a noisy environment these days, traffic and everything. But when you're a passive traveler on a train or a bus or an airplane or even sitting at your desk at work, it's amazing just even at work how much more you can concentrate just by blocking out all the printers and buzzes and hums and of normal office life. So they do make a difference, and they do work, and I think they're worth every penny of it. And as I said, I will not fly without a pair of them, because I tried an experiment when the very first noise-canceling headphones came out. Actually, Bose loaned me the prototype that were used in that Voyager around-the-world airplane that Rutan did.
Oh, yeah.
And he wore them because that plane was so noisy that he was afraid of losing his hearing, so they gave him a pair. So I flew from Chicago to Singapore and kept these phones on the entire time, except when I was on the ground. And I arrived with much less jet lag than I'd ever experienced in my life. I was able to sleep on the plane. I arrived, there was some jet lag, but much less. And you start to realize that the noise of the aircraft tires you out, whether you know it or not. The background noise, just your body's always responding to it and getting tired from it. And by blocking it out, you actually, when you're flying, arrive much more refreshed than if you just sit there and, try to read. So I sometimes use the phones without any music. I just put them on and turn on the noise cancellation and don't listen to any music.
Yeah. And so you get white noise, or is it like you don't get anything? I'm trying to imagine what it's like.
It's like all the background noise sort of fades down. Mm-hmm. And so you can still hear in the distance the slipstream of the airplane, but it's so much softer, and the rumble of the jet is totally gone. You don't hear the rumble of the engine anymore. The bass component is gone. And so you can sort of think. You're not constantly being bombarded by this noise that turns out to be very distracting.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, questions are welcome. We're here to take your calls, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. You can also email at will-talk@illinois.edu. You were talking earlier about how affordable now the big flat panel televisions have become. And I was just thinking about this the other night. I was sitting in front of my old Sony TV that still has picture tube, and I'm flipping around here, and I come by the shopping channel, and they were selling televisions. And now I don't recall how big this television was, but it was big. It was very, very big. And they were selling it for, I think, around $1,200, $1,400, which is more than I want to spend on television. But then it was also, it was huge. What size do you think, if someone says, okay, now I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy one of these televisions, what size do you have in your head, and a size that you think really is good if you want to have, particularly if you're going to be watching movies at home on DVD, and you'd like to have something like a theater-like experience?
I think the sweet spot is 42 to 46 inches. Those are the two sizes, 42-inch and 46-inch, that fit most rooms, that are rational, that are affordable. The 42-inch TV, you know, you can get for $700, good one. 46-inch you can get for $1,000 with a really good one. Unless you have a really big room or a really large family, yeah, the 55-inch is sure tempting, but it's bigger than most people need. The beauty is that, unlike with the old-fashioned televisions like your TV, David,
yes,
you can sit much closer to the TV because the resolution's so high, you don't see the dots, you don't see the picture elements. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you don't get the headache. If you used to sit too close to TV, you could see all the scanning lines, and it was as fuzzy. But these pictures are so sharp, you can sit about 20% closer to the TV, 25% closer to the TV, and get the same experience. So it means a big screen's even bigger. If you're sitting closer, it fills more of your field of view. So you really get the illusion of a much bigger screen than you've got. That's the other thing I didn't mention about what was introduced in the Consumer Electronics Show is now virtually all the new models will have LED lighting for the LCD TVs, and that makes a big difference. It's much truer colors, brighter colors, and the more expensive sets, it also can be used to make a truer black as well, which LCDs had a problem with. So that's another bonus that they step you up another $100 for. It used to be like a $500 premium. Now it's a $100 premium. And they have these inflated scanning rates. They're advertising 240 hertz scanning rates. You don't need to worry about that. It doesn't really add to anything. It's just a marketing ploy. That basically they went from 60 to 120. Okay, that was useful. They said, well, it'll stop smearing in sports and stuff. Well, it really doesn't make that much difference. So the scanning rate is not that critical. The 240 hertz is a marketing thing. But the LED lighting really is an improvement. And also, it'll probably last longer than the rest of the TV because LEDs generally don't burn out. So unlike the fluorescent tubes that like conventional TVs, they don't go bad.
Yeah, okay. So I think last time we made this point that if you're going to look for a flat panel LCD TV, you want one with LEDs.
Right, which are common now.
All right. Here's a caller here in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Earlier you were talking about HDMIs, and I'm wondering if you've got an opinion on HDMI splitters. My television has two HDMI inputs, and I have a couple of more HDMI things I'd like to add. So I was going to get a splitter where it would take two incoming HDMIs and then go into the one jack on the TV.
I have not worked with any of those, so I couldn't give you an intelligent answer as far as using them. They won't combine two. They will switch between two, I believe, because it's a very complicated interface. But I think that you shouldn't have a problem.
All righty, great. All right, thank you.
Okay. Again, the questions welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Do they still make turntables?
Yes.
And are people still buying turntables?
Yes. In fact, I was just out at Jeff Poor's place out in Old Farm Shops, and he has all these audiophile turntables and just amazing machines. I mean, they still exist. And some of them are very – he has one for $300 that's a terrific turntable. I'm not plugging one particular store. It's just that that's one of his specialties. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of turntables. You can buy the little Ion turntable for $100, which has a built-in converter and comes out with a USB plug you plug straight into your computer. It's not a great turntable. But if you've got four or five old LPs you still want to hear and want to put them on, you know, on a CD on your computer, well, that's what you get. But you can buy a turntable from $100, and they're still making $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 turntables. They still exist. So it's very easy to get a turntable these days. Mm-hmm. Unless you have a large vinyl collection, I'm dubious why you would need one, because I'm one of those people who still says that a well-recorded CD is every bit as good as a well-recorded LP. It's just that some of the fanatics out there really love their old vinyl and can't quite part with the idea that digital technology can equal analog technology, but it all depends on how the technology is employed, and that's mm-hmm. one thing that's always been the case. And yes, I think 70% of the CDs out there are poorly recorded, poorly pressed, and they don't equal some of the best vinyl recordings, but some of the classical recordings and a few of the jazz recordings are as good as anything that's ever been on LP, as far as I'm concerned. And if you get a really good turntable and a really good converter, you can convert your LPs to CDs and get great sound.
Yeah. In fact, Jason Croft is on the board. He's listening to the conversation, and he makes the point that vinyl is very popular, and in fact that there are a lot of record companies that are actually pressing new albums on vinyl, so new releases from a lot of pop groups. There are new releases. Yes, it's on CD, but if you want to get it on vinyl, it is available.
It exists, but look at the statistics. I mean, you know, when you're going from point one to point two, they say, oh, vinyl sales have doubled. But in reality, the actual total volume of vinyl sales is still minuscule compared to downloads and CDs. So we look and say, oh, vinyl's making a comeback. Well, it's making a very small comeback among a certain group of people. And it certainly has increased in the past few years, but it's still just a tiny fraction of the market.
Yeah, right. Okay. Let's see. We'll talk with someone in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
I recently saw a demonstration of 3D television. It was put on by Panasonic, and they had used a plasma screen. Is that something that's likely to come down the pike anytime soon, or is it a lot more expensive than the regular? They were using some glasses that apparently have shutters in them that switch from eye to, or left to right eye and so forth. So.
Well, yes, Panasonic intends to market their basic 3D set by the end of this year is what they've announced. And with those shutter glasses, of course, it'll be very expensive, A, because it's new and a novelty, and B, because it requires that extra component, those glasses, which adds to the cost of the set. So they're going to even when the technology becomes cheap, you're still going to be paying more because there's an extra piece they have to build and sell to you to make it work, compared to conventional television. But it will be available at the end of the year, and there will be broadcast. There's supposed to be a cable channel that's going to specialize in 3D sports. So if people are looking into it, and there's going to be some material available.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. And line two, Champaign County. Hello.
Hi. What you know, or do you use AAC as a streamer and as a iPods use them, and I understand that they're intrinsically a better, it's also called MP4 for the Motion Picture Association, but I know some European, something that got absorbed by Sky, actually, unfortunately, digitally imported DI.FM, gives the option of streaming in this advanced audio codec, and it's intrinsically more musical. I listen to most news programs on the web, so I don't mind MP3, but for musical listening, if you have a good system, it seems that, and I don't hear many people talking about it, and I think it's one of the advantages the iPod has had that people don't mention either.
Well, you're right. AAC is an improved version. It's actually related to MP3, but a far superior way of doing it. There are actually about a dozen different encoding schemes out there. If you go out and look, you can find all different kinds. There's Windows Media Encoding. There's AAC. There's the conventional MP3. There's MP4. There's all these different ways of doing it, and AAC isn't identical to MP4. It's slightly different, and it does sound much better. It's a better way of doing it. They don't lose as much information in the process. If you're really a fanatic, you can use something called FLAC, which is a lossless compression scheme, where they squeeze the files down by 50%, whereas MP3 can do it to 80-90%. But by squeezing it only 50%, it doesn't throw anything away. It keeps all the original data. So like when I send my program to WFMT on the internet, I simply FLAC it, which reduces the size of the file by half, and it goes down the internet that much faster because there's less data. So yeah, you're absolutely right that those people using an iPod and using AAC will have a good experience compared to just using basic MP3. The one problem is that MP3 has become a universal standard. It plays just about everywhere now. You buy a car, it comes with an MP3 player. Not all car disc players will decode AAC. It depends. Some will record decode WMA, for example. Some won't. So that's the one advantage of MP3 is that you know it'll play anywhere if you're using a disc. If you're using an iPod, it doesn't make any difference. It's in your iPod, and that's that. But as a standard, MP3 still is the standard. But you can increase the bit rate enough that it still sounds pretty good.
It's still a pity, though. But Sony tried to introduce their own proprietary standard. I don't think they've done much good with it. But then they had their first year where they didn't make any money, too. So
They've been using a version of A-Track for, almost 20 years now, because it came about with the with their little mini disc system, and that's one of the reasons mini disc failed is because they insisted on using their own proprietary system, and then they upgraded it for their headphone digital players. But nobody wanted it because it wasn't a standard, and it wasn't significantly better than other people's like AAC. So it really wasn't a very good move on Sony's part.
All right, thanks.
All right, and we'll continue here. And the next person we'll talk with is in Peoria, line 4. Hello.
Well, looking for a basically a DVD recorder, maybe with a VCR combination. I'm not quite sure exactly the possible choices. Maybe you could come up with maybe alternatives. Been looking for a Blu-ray recorder, but none seem to be on the market yet. So settling for a minus R possible DVD recorder with a VCR combination. Could you help me out?
Well, the last ones I've seen on the shelves, I believe LG was offering one, Samsung had one, and Panasonic had one were the three I remember seeing, and maybe Philips. But probably the Philips and the LG are the same since they share a lot of technology. So they were costing in the neighborhood of $200 to $300. And I think you'd better get one fast because the idea of having a VHS player combined with the DVD recorder is fading fast as more and more people have made the transition to digital. So I would go out to I can't remember if I've seen it at Best Buy or not. I know I'd seen it at the late and unlamented Circuit City. But you'll have to go to one of the big box stores like Best Buy or Sears or somebody or probably Walmart, and that's where you're going to find it. There are three or four models that were available.
Okay. Is there a technology advance or technology advantage of maybe the Panasonic over the other components?
Well, Panasonic did give you the capability of recording DVD RAM, which had the advantage of acting more like a computer hard drive with random access and things you couldn't get on a regular DVD. So it had that one advantage that it could duplicate a hard drive in some situations for recording, and that was kind of useful for editing and things like that. But also Panasonic is a very high quality. I find their equipment to be superb quality.
Well, thank you.
All right, thank you. Just real quick, is there a significant difference, do you think, in the picture quality between conventional DVDs and Blu-rays?
Well, if you have a HDTV, yes. Even though most players and most TVs can convert a conventional DVD to a quasi-HD quality, they're really, I've seen Blu-ray discs, and they are stunning. So there is a difference, but it depends on how picky you are about the quality. Certainly an up-converted DVD looks fine, looks great, but once you've seen a Blu-ray disc, I have a friend who's almost a Blu-ray junkie at this point. I mean, if it says Blu-ray, and he sits there like he's just gazing at the screen like he's, you know, infatuated. So I think there is a definite, improvement with Blu-ray. And the cost of the disc isn't that much greater anymore. So it's probably worth it. The players have come down to under $200, which is amazing.
Okay. Champagne, line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a brother with Parkinson's, and the family has been trying hard to get an amplifier that will allow him to speak. Is there any recent technology that... we'll deal with the muscular loss of or ability to speak?
Oh, gosh, that's an area that I really am unfamiliar with, and I wish I could help, but I just don't have an answer for that.
That's okay. Another curiosity question I have is, do you have any figure on how many people did not come back into television when there was a switchover?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I'll have to research that. I think most of the population did eventually get a converter box since they were so cheap with the government coupon. You could buy a box for $5 or $10. So I assume that everybody who had a TV is watching some form of TV now. But, a few people may have dropped out, but I doubt it's a significant number because the government made the converter boxes so cheap.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you. Over to a caller here in Dana, Indiana. Line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was started listening at the time you were talking about the bit rate on the iTunes and iPod. And when I put on my CD collection, I just let the system take it in its default mode. And, of course, now discovered that they are in there at the 128 rate. Is it possible to convert that to the higher rate now that they're in iTunes?
You can, but it won't do you any good because once you've lost the data, you can't put it back by converting it to a higher bit rate. It has to come from the original conversion.
If I have the motivation, then can I start over with putting in the original CDs and asking for it to go in at a higher rate?
Yes, absolutely. You can do that. You can delete the original entry and then go back and re-encode it in the higher rate, and that's no problem at all from the CD. That's easy to do.
Okay, and then the other point would be right now my total iTunes gigabyte number is 10 with the iPod will accept 80. And so if I would put these in at 320 rate, what kind of an increase in size would I be getting?
Well, doing a little bit of quick math, I think you'd then be up to 30 or 40 gigabytes if you're 10 gigabytes now.
Okay, so I'm okay for an 80.
Yeah, you're just going to basically, if it's 128 and you're going to 320, well, that's not quite three times. So you're going to use three times as much space, so it'll just be under 30 gigabytes.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And again, we'll talk with another caller, someone back here in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, you were talking about digital TV converter boxes. They are cheap, and I have this silly one made in China, and it just keeps going bad and can never get it to work. The instructions are, after you've set and made all the connections, they say turn on the TV set and switch it to external AV mode. You will see the picture come from the box. So there's no switch that I see on my Toshiba TV, my old Toshiba TV, that switches it to external AV mode.
Well, depending on the model of your TV and the age of your TV, if you go into the menuing system on the TV, there is probably a menu that tells you what inputs you have a choice of, whether you want S-video or whatever. And there may be an AV mode or coming from S-video or whatever that would match whatever the box is putting out. But it would not be a hardwired switch. It would be something in the menuing system of the TV. If the TV does not have a menu, then you need to use the RF output of the box, which is the antenna output, and just run the antenna output of the box into the antenna input on the TV. That's the other way to do it if you don't have a choice on the TV.
Well, I think essentially that's what we've done. There's something called an RF connector or something.
Right, correct.
We run, we've connected that up between the TV and the box.
Right, but if you go into the TV, if your remote control has something that says menu or input selection or whatever, and cycle through that, you'll see various inputs that are possible on your TV, if your TV has them. Some TVs did not have them. So.
Well, we have something called a top menu and a DVD menu and
Well, you're going to have to go through those menus, and you'll eventually find one that has the inputs the TV can accept.
Okay, but now I wonder if I don't get any picture on the old TV anymore either, so... I think maybe if I just sort of disconnect the digital box, there will be some menu that I can get on the old TV.
Well, as David
not that
says,
old, actually, it was a digital TV with a DVD player in it.
Well, then it should accept an AV input, but as is said on the show frequently, when the doctors are on, it's very hard to diagnose over the telephone without seeing the actual setup. So I can't go much further than what I've told you.
Okay.
All right. We'll try to get one more, and that would be somebody in Champaign. This is line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Calling with a question on computer monitors. Do you have recommendations on brand and size?
Well, you know, it's funny. I keep track of that, even though it's not my specialty.
Uh-huh.
And each size is different. I think that the prime size now is 21 to 22 inches is what the popular size is.
Okay.
And it depends. I've seen recommendations. There's a couple of the Dell monitors that have gotten very high reviews. I'm very fond of Samsung monitors, which is the same company that makes the Samsung TVs, mm-hmm. Makes a very fine monitor. It all depends on how much you want to spend. You can spend a lot on a computer monitor if you want really great quality. Also, whether you want widescreen, because computer monitors now have the choice between the old aspect ratio of the square or the widescreen. But I've seen varying reviews, and it all depends on the specific model number, because within a given manufacturer, Dell can have four 22-inch monitors, but one of them is the one that's really great. And I don't have the model number to give you on that one. But I'd suggest going online to either PCMag.com or MaximumPC.com or CNET, and they review these monitors, and they're pretty objective reviews as far as I can tell. And they'll give you an idea of what the best monitors are, especially MaximumPC is pretty they don't mince words when they don't like something. They really tell you they don't like it, and when they do love it, they really tell you how much they like it. So I think that's the best way to find a rating on a computer monitor that's really useful.
Okay. Can I repeat those? You said one was CNET.com?
Yeah, and the other was
MaximumPC?
MaximumPC.com and then PCMag.com.
PCMag.com.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, fine.
All right.
Thank you much.
Well, there we'll have to finish up with our thanks to Rich Warren. You can look for his column in the News Gazette newspaper.
Usually
also
on Thursdays.
On Thursdays. And also, we got this problem called the Midnight Special. When is that on again?
It's 2 o'clock on AM 580, Saturday afternoons.
Well, yeah. All right. Thanks very much for being here. Rich Warren, occasionally he's on the program and talks about consumer audio and video. Maybe one of these days he'll pop up on the afternoon magazine and talk about music.